been yet, Sean?"
"Oh, yes, sire," said Sean, almost as flustered as the king. "Got it right here. Don't you worry about it. I'll open it all up and have it on your desk right away, sire." Something the matter, sire?"
I think perhaps..."
Sean was already tearing at the wrappers.
"Here's that book on etiquette you've been waiting for, sire, and the pig stock book, and..."
"Ooh, what's this one?" Verence made a grab for it. Sean automatically tried to hang on to it. The wrapping split, and the large, bulky book thumped onto the cobbles. Its fluttering pages played their woodcuts to the breeze. They looked down.
"Wow," said Sean.
"My word," said Ridcully.
Said the king.
"Ooh."
Sean picked up the book very, very carefully and turned a few pages.
"Hey, look at this one. He's doing it with his feet. I didn't know you could do it with your feet."
He nudged Ponder Stibbons.
"Look, sir."
Ridcully peered at the king. "You all right, your majesty?" he said. Verence squirmed.
"And look, here's one with both chaps are doing it with sticks."
"What?" said Verence.
"Wow," said Sean. "Thank you, sire. This is going to really come in handy, I can tell you. I mean, I've picked up bits and pieces here and there, but..."
Verence snatched the book from Sean's hands and looked at the title page.
"Martial arts. Martial arts. But I'm sure I wrote marital..."
"Sire?"
There was one exquisite moment while Verence fought for mental balance, but he won.
"Ah, yes, right. Yes, of course. Well, you see, a well-trained army is essential to the security of any kingdom. That's right. Yes, fine. Magrat and me, we thought,
Yes, it's for you, Sean."
"I'll start practicing right away, sire."
Good.
Jason Ogg awoke and wished he hadn't. Let's be clear, many authorities have tried to describe a hangover. Dancing elephants and so on are often employed for this purpose. The descriptions never work. They always smack of, "Ho, ho, here's one for the lads, let's have some hangover machismo. Ho, ho, landlord, another 19 pints of lager. Hey, we supped some stuff last night. Ho, ho." Anyway, you can't describe a scumble hangover. The best bit of it is a feeling that your teeth have dissolved and coated themselves on your tongue. Eventually, the blacksmith sat up and opened his eyes. Insert the usual red-hot curried marbles description here, if you like. His clothes were soaked with dew. His head felt full of wisps and whispers. He stared at the stones. The scumble jar was lying in the heather. After a moment or two, he picked it up and took an experimental swig. It was empty. He nudged Weaver in the ribs with his boot.
"Wake up, you old bugger. We've been here all night."
One by one, the Morris men made the short but painful journey into consciousness.
"I'm going to get some stick from our Eva when I get home," moaned Carter.
"You might not," said Thatcher, who was on his hands and knees looking for his hat. "Maybe when you gets home she'll have married someone else, eh?"
"Maybe 100 years will have gone past," said Carter, hopefully.
"Cool, I hope so," said Weaver, brightening up. "I had sevenpence invested in the thrift bank down in Ahulan. I'll be a millionaire at complicated interest. I'll be as rich as creosote."
"Who's creosote?" said Thatcher. "Famous rich bugger," said Baker, fishing one of his boots out of a peat pool. "Foreign."
"Wasn't he the one everything he touched turned to gold?" said Carter.
"Nah, that was someone else. Some king or other. That's what happens in foreign parts. One minute you're all right, the next minute everything you touch turns to gold. He was plagued with it."
Carter looked puzzled.
"How did he manage when he had to..." "Let that be a lesson to you, young Carter," said Baker. "You stay here where folks are sensible, not go gadding off abroad where you might suddenly be holding a fortune in your hands and not have anything to spend it on."
"We've slept out here all night," said Jason uncertainly. "That's dangerous, that is."
"You're right there, Mr. Ogg," said Carter. "I think something went to the toilet in my ear."
"I mean, strange things can enter your head."
"That's what I mean, too."
Jason blinked. He was certain he dreamed. He could remember dreaming, but he couldn't remember what the dream had been about. But there was still the feeling in his head of voices talking to him, but too far away to be heard.
"Oh, well,"
he said, managing to stand up at a third attempt.
"Probably no harm done. Let's get on home and see what century it is."
"What century is it, anyway?"
said Thatcher.
"Century of the fruit bat, isn't it?"
said Baker.
"Might not